Welcome to Open Minds UFO Radio. I am your host, Alejandro Rojas, and we have Jason Schmitty McKellen on the line here with us. Hello, sir.
Well, you got the middle name right, but you screwed up the last name.
Yeah, McKellen.
You never do that.
I don't know what I did. I paused there because I was like, that did not sound right, what came out of my mouth there.
It's Monday. You're always entitled to screw up my name because yeah. Mondays, hey, you can blame everything on Mondays.
Yeah. So how you doing, Schmitty?
I am fantastic, my friend. How about yourself?
Not too bad. Doing all right. So not too bad.
Yes.
A lot of people
like
were
hear.
Freaking out because we had a bunch of rain out here in Phoenix. And, of course, the rain doesn't soak into the ground. It creates flooding. And in some parts of the state, there was flooding. But I guess everybody assumed that the entire state was underwater or something. So this is funny. I had my cousin calling, and he's like, so I hear you're flooded out. And I'm like, well, not really. And he's, you know, that's other parts of the city or the state. And he says, oh, well, my mom, you know, my aunt, said that she thought for some reason no one could get a hold of me. And I was like, in some shelter somewhere or something, because the floods had washed away Phoenix, Arizona. But luckily, that's not the case, and I'm all right.
Oh, Phoenix. You got to love when it rains.
What's funny, too, is nobody had tried to get a hold of me, which is weird. So he calls, and of course, I answer, and I'm like, no, you're the first one to try to call, and obviously, you were able to get a hold of me, so I'm all right.
Yay.
Funny stuff. How's the weather out there? I'll bet it's wonderful.
It is, actually. People in Boise are complaining about how hot it is because it's been in the upper 80s, low 90s, and sunny.
Mm-hmm.
So they're melting, but
wow.
I'm loving it.
Yeah, perfect for you.
It's been some occasional rain, but nothing major.
Yeah. Crazy. All right. Well, I guess I should start talking about the radio show. We're doing a radio show right now, I think. And our guest today is the wonderful Yvonne Smith, who does abduction research, of course. And she has a new book out called Coronado. And it is The President, the Secret Service, and Alien Abduction. So really interesting stuff. It's probably different than you're thinking if you already don't know about it. So very interesting. So we're going to talk to her. And it seems like, you know, I've had her on the show a gajillion times. But that is not the case. It's just I see her all the time. Luckily, she's at a lot of the same events we go to. She's a good friend, so I always get to hang out and talk with her. And, of course, we've had her at the conference several times, and she usually comes and does the experiencer sessions. So some of our people who are you know, regular podcast listeners who haven't been able to go to these events have not had the pleasure of hearing a whole lot about Yvonne. So we'll be talking to her in just a minute. So that's exciting.
It's very exciting, and I was just thinking about it. She's probably the person in the field. Yeah, I would say so. I think I've hugged her the most out of anybody. I think Daryl Sims would be a close second, and you would be number three.
All right, yeah, some good hugging there. Those are some good huggers.
There's a lot of hugging going on.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a lot of fun. Daryl Sims, and I got to tell this story because it's so funny, and I love it. Daryl Sims, for people who don't know, you know, he was on Uncovering Aliens with Maureen, that TV show that was on all kinds of different channels, what, History and Science Channel, I think, and stuff. I think they're still showing it. But he's also the alien hunter. They kind of made fun of him on The Daily Show. But he's a really nice guy, but he's a tall, you know, Texan, and he can come off as really hardcore. He has this piercing stare when he wants to. And at Roswell, he gets up, and he kind of storms over toward the food because they had a banquet for the speakers at the end. And he says, who made this? I think it was the coleslaw or something. Who made this coleslaw? And you could tell the people got really scared. And they're like, oh, my gosh. And they were cool. They weren't going to give up their boss. So they're like, we made it, you know. And he said, well, that's the best damn coleslaw I've ever had. And so, you know, they were afraid he was going to freak out, but he was just being nice as usual. But I think he did that on purpose to intimidate him and to be funny. But, of course, then they're like, oh, yeah, the chef is outside. So Daryl could go outside, storm outside and say, you make the best damn food I've had. So that was kind of a funny, I think. When actually he's a teddy bear, he's a hugger.
He absolutely is.
So, and you've experienced
He's got a good sense of humor. You gotta be used to it. Otherwise, yeah. He catches you off guard because he seems like a big, tough guy. And
yeah. He's
really angry, but he's not.
Yeah. If he's coming storming at you, he's more likely to hug you than anything else.
That's probably right.
Yeah. All right. Well, Mr. Jason, you are here so we could talk some UFO news. So I want to ask you, what is your favorite UFO news of this past week?
Well, you know, I think I'm going to talk about microbes, Alejandro, because it's something that I talked about a lot. Not micro machines, but microbes. Yes. So, study if you've heard this one before. Researchers say that in their drilling through ice in Antarctica, have discovered microbes deep in these subsurface lakes, this time in Lake Wilhelms. Willens. And this group of researchers is claiming that this is the first time that microbes have been removed from one of these subsurface lakes in Antarctica. And as we've reported many times on this show and on Spacing Out and on our website at Minds.tv, for the past several years now, scientists have been pulling microbes out of these lakes, enhancing the search for extraterrestrial life by increasing the understanding of life as we know it. Astrobiologists look on Earth to see extreme locations where life can exist to better increase our understanding of environments that can sustain life. So it helps them in determining moons and planets where life might exist. Now, this new group claims that all of these previous attempts at pulling out these microbes are failures because it could all be contamination. We hear this time and time again in science where, and it's funny because I think in the UFO field, a lot of people like to talk about how, ufology isn't taken seriously because there's all this infighting and nobody agrees with anybody. Hey, that's how science is too. Mainstream scientists always disagree with each other. They're always talking about their studies right, this other study's wrong, and that's the case here. I mean, these other previous studies, the scientists are convinced that their studies have produced results showing active ecosystems, thriving life in these extreme conditions. So I find it amusing that this latest study, conducted by the Wilhelms Ice Stream Subglacial Axis Research Drilling, that's the name of the project, they're claiming that they're the first to do it, I think other people are going to disagree.
Right. And at least, you know, of course, you're not an astrobiologist, but you follow this stuff pretty closely. Do you feel that they have any more of a stronger claim than anyone else? From what you can see.
The thing with this project is they took more precautions to potentially prevent contamination. But contamination can happen a variety of ways, but even so, I mean, with core samples and things extracted in this test, there have been core samples extracted before and pretty decent measures taken to contamination with previous studies. So I'm not sure. Again, I'm not a scientist. I don't know the exact details with all of these different experiments. But the previous teams have been pretty darn sure that they what they've extracted from these lakes and from the sediment below the lakes, they've come up with life. So I don't know. I think it's kind of a silly claim to make, but they're the scientists. They know more than I do.
Yeah. Yeah, so that is exciting. And I love the story, too, of the Russians who say they found some plankton on the surface of the space station. And that's exciting, too. Some more extremophiles. And, you know, that's being debated right now. NASA's saying, well, we haven't heard anything official. But it sounds like, because they weren't explicit saying these things were living, but it sounds like they were alluding, they were essentially saying that they were living and flourishing on the ISS. So at least all of these discoveries of these extremophiles and these living in these places that are unexpected for scientists, it's pretty exciting.
It is exciting. And you know what? With all the fighting aside and claims that we're right and you're wrong, I think it's all great. Because we're seeing so much of this now, reporting about extremophiles and the increasing locations where life as we know it may exist. That's all just helping further the idea of astrobiology, further the idea that life is in a lot more places than we thought it would be. And, you know, that's becoming commonplace. People are used to that with the ISS and the plankton. This is all, I think, just moving in the right direction, and the mega official announcement is just right around the corner that there is going to be definitive, concrete proof that extraterrestrial life exists.
Yep, it's coming. All right, so my stories. I said stories just because...
I know you're going to cheat.
I'm framing mine in this Houston hubbub. I personally feel... The Houston thing is mostly reflections, maybe an LED kite. The reason I say one of them is possibly an LED kite is because if you go to our site or if you go to, well, now many sites out there are posting this. In Brazil, you know, there is a kite that's exactly like that first picture. In fact, that first picture could be a cut and paste job because the Houston UFO sightings that are making a big deal, they don't clarify where that picture had come from. The witnesses aren't really talking. And so what I'm saying is there's much more interesting sightings out there, I think. Even in Texas last week, we posted about a radio DJ in Amarillo, Texas, named Dallas Chambers, who said he saw a lot of people on the side of the road. He pulled over. They were watching this blue dot in the sky. He got a little bit of video of it, and it was bouncing around and really weird. That one's cool. And, of course, the witness is a radio DJ, and you can talk to him. He's talking. You could go talk to him and ask him about this, whereas for the most part, the main witness in the Houston one isn't even talking to the news media or anybody, so he's inaccessible. But almost even more interesting is this story we posted in North Carolina of some sightings last week that people were seeing off of the beach. And the reason why this is especially exciting is that since we posted it, we've had quite a few people come to us and submit. One gentleman submitted a video to us. Others have said, I live in North Carolina and I have a beach house and I've seen these weird lights and they've described them. What's cool about this is that although images sent from the first sighting very well could be Chinese lanterns because they look similar in color and the characteristics are not necessarily outside of the realm of what a Chinese lantern would do, the descriptions from the witnesses and the video that was submitted to us recently on regarding this case don't look like Chinese lanterns. What the guy sent us were like some lights that flashed here and there out in the distance and then were gone. So that was really interesting. So some really interesting sighting reports, and these are all witnesses who are accessible. One of the witnesses replied to our story with some more detail, and she's been in there commenting a little bit. So you can actually go to our story and comment or ask her questions, and she's going to answer. So all of these are better because you've got more pictures, you know who they're coming from, the witnesses are actually talking to the press and everyone. So they're much more accessible. I think these are much better stories than the Houston one and more exciting. And I wish they would kind of pay attention to some of these some more, because I would love to hear some more from these witnesses. And these witnesses are so excited about what they've seen that if they are something mundane, hopefully someone will come forward. But I don't know. What do you think, Jason? I mean, Chinese lanterns over the ocean, at least out over the ocean, is kind of something we haven't heard of. Not that it's impossible.
No, it's not impossible. And I agree with you when I initially saw it, just from the still photo. Chinese lanterns is definitely what it appeared to be, but based on the video and other descriptions from additional witnesses, I agree with you. This is so much more interesting than what we've seen the news just having a field day with in Houston. I love how people are coming to our site and commenting on this with additional descriptions of behaviors they observed at these lights in North Carolina with the objects going out and then shooting off in certain directions. It's a really fascinating case to me, and I hope we continue to hear more about it. Unfortunately, I don't think the media is going to latch onto it like they did with Houston.
Right. Yeah, I don't think they are. I've even, like, when I tweeted about this, included the station that covered this in the first place, and I even sent the reporter an email just letting them know we're getting more witnesses, but I haven't noticed that they've done any updates. So maybe I'll try again, just because I think it would be good of them to talk to some of these other witnesses and update their story. If not, so be it. But hey, at the very least, everybody can go to openminds.tv and check out this story. That is literally a developing story on the website. The title of this one I'm talking about is UFO Seen by Multiple Witnesses Over North Carolina Beaches. So check it out.
And the individual who did send us the video is somebody we've featured before on our site. He is a pilot in that area. So he's seen UFOs there before. He, again, he's a pilot. He's familiar with things in the sky. He's familiar with airports and the location. So it's even more fascinating to have the video and the description from this pilot.
Right. Yeah. So really cool stuff. Yeah, I love that these people are coming to the site. You know, thank you if any of you are listening for donating or, you know, contributing to the comments and informing the public about what you're seeing. And, you know, hopefully, maybe I should send this over to MUFON, see if they're looking into it too. If not, maybe we, at least they can, have an investigator check it out. And then Roger Marsh can write up the story and put it on the site.
That's right.
They get their final findings.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks to everybody sending us stuff. That's what we're here for.
Yep. So, and remember, we've got all of Roger Marsh's stories with the MUFON stuff. So, and all of this you can read at openminds.tv. So thanks for joining us for the news, Mr. Schmitty.
It is always my absolute pleasure, my friend.
Schmitty's fun. It's fun to say Schmitty.
I don't know where you got that from, but I'm glad you enjoy it.
Yeah, it's just silliness. Just straight silliness. All right, well, I guess let's go ahead and talk to Yvonne. I am very excited to welcome back to the show Yvonne Smith. Hello.
Hi, Alejandro. Thank you for having me.
You know what? I have to – oh, I feel like I need to apologize. It's funny because – when I was getting ready for the show, I was like, okay, I'm going to go listen to or go check out the past times I've had Yvonne on to make sure we don't talk about things we've talked about before. And for some reason, I was under the impression that you've done the show like a lot and that you were even – we interviewed you recently. And I was shocked to find out that's not the case, that it's been years and I think only once.
Yeah.
And I think it's because you're at the conference every year and we see you so much that
right.
In my mind, it's so weird how the brain works. You know, in my mind, I thought we had been on the show together recently.
Well, I know. I did the show at least once. I don't remember when it was. But no, just recently, February, I was at the Congress, of course. So, yeah, so I'm glad we're doing it now, especially good timing with my book just coming out and all of that. And thank you again for writing your nice endorsement.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, and yeah, that's what makes it fun. It's kind of good in a way because now we can talk about the book and the situation in the book and everything completely. But I kind of feel bad because it's like, well, I should have her on more often. I mean, you kind of you really are pretty much for me. And when people call and ask, you are the go-to person. When it comes to abductions, for me, I think just because we're so familiar and I do, you know, appreciate your experience and your work.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I just, there's a lot more to do. I mean, I'm planning on starting an institute at some point. It's in the planning stages for, so that I could train therapists around the country because over the last couple of years especially, I've been receiving many emails about from therapists, from established therapists who are interested in working with the abduction cases.
Mm.
So I've just been talking to people, having a couple of meetings at this last contact in the desert that we just came from. And so we'll see. I'll keep you posted on it and send me some positive thoughts because I think it's so necessary because sometimes I'm at a loss when I get an email from a particular state and there's nobody there to refer them to. So I want to create just as my colleague Dr. John Mack did with his peer organization where he had a referral list and I was on his list. And so of course unfortunately we lost him much too soon, but this is what I want to create is a referral list for therapists all over the country so we could refer to these therapists knowing that they are trained to do this work. Because you don't learn this in college. You know, I didn't even learn it in hypnotherapy college. I mean, this is something that's not taught, and so I think it's important.
You know what's funny? I have a couple of stories now I want to go over because I want to talk about contact in the desert too. But I got a hypnotherapy certification. And, of course, it took months. I got it from this institute that was ran by this woman who has several, like, degrees. She's got a PhD or two. She's got several masters. And another gentleman that she works with who is a businessman mostly, but a very accomplished person as well. You know, mainstream people. And I was shocked that we had a lecture with Dr. Sprinkle, Leo Sprinkle there, and they showed up. And my jaw dropped, and I was like, oh my gosh, you know, you guys know Dr. Sprinkle? And they said, yeah, it was shocking. And they were like, yeah, we do. They even said they had developed a course, a class on abductions. But because it was so fringe that they did put it in their curriculum for a year, but then they took it out because of the negative feedback and it was such a fringe topic. But they were really into the topic and they actually had a course or a class on it that they had as part of their curriculum. For a period of time, and they knew Dr. Sprinkle. So, yeah, kind of really strange, but kind of to speak towards what you were mentioning about how, you know, there aren't any, there is no training.
No, exactly, and this is what I'm trying to achieve. You know, I've been doing my work now for 23 years, and I'm trying to achieve to reach a goal where this is no longer fringe. It cannot be fringe. I mean, there are too many people who are having the experience. It's more common than really the average person out there wishes to even consider.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have to do something about this. And that's why I'm continuing, you know, my work, because at this point, there are just people very few and far between.
Yeah, you know, And I've got a degree in psychology. I've got this certificate. So I've done a lot of work in this arena. And, you know, a lot of it, when it comes to therapy, is not about the actual circumstances behind what is happening, but it's more about perception and how these perceptions are affecting the patient and how to help them cope with whatever perceptions they're having. And that's what's really tragic about this field, is that regardless of whether you feel this is a physical phenomena or not, these people are perceiving and they're having these issues that need to be dealt with, that they need help with. So people in this field should be trained to help people who perceive they're having these experiences, especially when it comes to the number of people who are having these issues.
Yeah, I mean, just for example, when I have hosted the experience sessions at the Congress, oh my gosh, I mean, the numbers grow every morning when I'm there. And to me, it's an indication where, you know, the need is so great that people are hungry for support and being able to talk to other people, you know, because many people come from areas where there is nothing. I mean, they're really by themselves. And so I'm glad that you organize these experiencer sessions. I mean, I did one for the first time in Roswell this past July, and oh my God, it was a full house, standing room only. And that was the first time in all those years that I'd lectured there that I decided, you know what, I'm going to try this. And it's the same thing. And it was only the one time though, that it was, I believe it was on a Sunday afternoon. But the result of that, four people who live there in Roswell are starting up their own support group, so I'm helping them do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that way they have people from other areas in New Mexico and even outside of New Mexico coming to attend. And so I told them, you know, I'm happy to answer whatever questions, but I told them what the important thing is consistency. You know, set a day of the month and the time and it was like with zero for the last 22 years, I've had it on the fourth Sunday of every month. So people mark their calendars and they know the fourth Sunday they get to go to a support group meeting. That's what it is. It's consistency and commitment.
Mm-hmm. So they know they have someone to talk to, which has got to be so helpful.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think people realize your background is in PTSD, and I don't think that, and it's one of the controversies I know when it comes to the VA and everything, is who can administer therapy, but that how important talk therapy alone, simply talking about things is one of the best, and it's one of the things that has been proven to be most effective.
Well, that's what it is. When people, the majority, I would say, of my clients come to my office for the first time, so many times I'm the only person that they've been able to talk to. And, you know, they just, for 2 hours, they'll just, oh, my gosh, they've been talking. And at the end, they'll tell me, oh, my God, I feel so much better. There's so many times we do a consultation for 2 hours and there's no hypnosis, because they just want to talk.
Mm-hmm.
They just want to vent and get all of this out. And it's so healing for them. And then we start scheduling their regressions when they're ready. And that's what the whole thing is about those, experiencer sessions, is that, I try to give everybody a chance, even though they're big. You know, and of course we split the sessions the last time I did with Gwen. But, you know, it's really funny. And I don't know, I may have emailed you just, you know, from some feedback, but many of them, it said they'd rather all be in one room.
Oh, really? So, that's good to know, because we're in the middle of planning right now. So that is good to know.
I thought I usually try to send you feedback, mm-hmm. But
you probably did. But
it's almost like they need that support from each other and the feeling that they're all together,
mm-hmm.
In one room. So you know, however that can, you know, we can relieve that problem. But, yeah, it's just amazing. I'm so glad that you do this, because it's just, the first time I did it, I sat there going, oh, my God, this is like a giant serial meeting.
Yeah, you know? Cool. Well, you know, this brings up an interesting question, because when it comes to, we've talked about on the show before, about the link between PTSD and, people with abduction experiences. You know, one of the controversies with the VA, is who can administer talk therapy. A lot of people feel that, you know, with some training from a licensed therapist, that anybody can administer a talk therapy session. And that's kind of what these people are doing with these therapy sessions when it comes to abduction. Have you found that is okay? That it's okay for a novice with at least some guidance from you to head up an experiencer session?
As long as they're a therapist, mm-hmm. You know, with some background in, you know, dealing with their patients or clients. I call mine clients. But, you know, they do have to have some kind of background in dealing with people who are dealing with trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Because as I talk to the audiences and I say, you know, a horrific car accident, or someone's been raped, or someone's been sexually abused or physically abused, or an alien abduction, the symptoms are all the same. You know, they have sleepless nights, they're hypervigilant, they have... when they do sleep, they'll have recurring dreams or nightmares, flashbacks. And, you know, I was amazed when I started working with this, and I thought, no matter what, it is a trauma, and I have to address that trauma so that these people can live a normal life, whatever normal is now,
mm-hmm.
because the abduction experience is going to be in their lives. It's not going to go away. It may lay dormant for a while, but then it comes back.
Mm-hmm.
So they just have to, you know, be guided in how to incorporate this. And I found from talking to these people and my clients talking to me, from personal or private hypnosis sessions, to bring up all those hidden memories. That's what the fear is the fear of the unknown. Is what happened? What happened mm-hmm. to me? You know, or am I crazy? And then when they come, they make a decision to come to the support group meetings, and they speak to other people, and they realize that they're not alone. They never have been alone, and that is a tremendous help to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen people over the years, my gosh, I mean, just been able to carry on, you know, with their lives, where they were depressed and didn't want to leave their house, to, you know, getting together with other people. And really, it's getting together with other experiencers who understand what they're going through,
mm-hmm.
and what all this means. And, you know, we had our meeting last night. Well, yesterday, I adjourned at 6 o'clock, and we were still there talking until almost 9 o'clock. So, you know, it's that need still to talk to each other. So, you know, I love the work. I love seeing the results from the work, and that's why I think my next step is to create an institute,
mm-hmm.
you know, to train established therapists. Right now, I'm not going to teach hypnosis and certify them. They're going to be established therapists who have contacted me, and I'm already creating a list. And then from there, I teach them. Many of them know hypnosis because they, you know, they had some training. But now we're going to, you know, start talking about how to address the abduction issue.
Mm-hmm. So it is important, before people go it alone, starting an experiencer, kind of a support group, to at least contact someone like you. And luckily, there is someone like you available at CERO International, just so people know, Close Encounter Research Organization, CERO International.com is right. Where they can get a hold of you.
They can, yeah, my contact information is there. And that too, is why I, you know, branched out from CERO, the private support group, to do things the way, say, Open Minds is doing. I mean, where we all have to work together, bring quality speakers in so that we keep this whole subject out on the forefront, because it no longer can be fringe, no longer. You know, we're past that, do UFOs exist? You know, we have so much evidence about it. And so I'm working towards getting this abduction issue out of the closet, because it really does, I feel, it really violates someone's civil rights when they can't talk about what happened to them just because they say UFO.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wrong. It's totally wrong. We're in 2014. And we're still fighting for this. And, you know, so I'm going to just, you know, do this until I can't do this anymore. I think when I look around and I see, you know, the colleagues that we've lost in the abduction field, that I think, okay, you know, I'm not going to be able to do this forever either. So I want to be able to establish an institute somewhere where when I'm gone, someone will step up in my place and continue the support and, you know, all of it. So, Alejandro, we have a lot of work ahead of us.
Yeah. Well, and you know what I found was really interesting is when I discovered this is that psychologists are trained or therapists are trained not to put their own value system in front right. of the therapy. So they're not supposed to be judging, you know, it's different when it comes to legal issues, but they're not supposed to be judging their clients. And
exactly.
They're supposed to be helping the clients. And it's tragic. And it's wrong that, you know, like you said, that's one of the things that really gets me with abduction research and what's going on right now with the public and the way it's treated is that they need somewhere to go, and it's a responsibility of a therapist to help these people and not just ignore them or assume that they're, you know, crazy. And really, as a therapist, even if they are crazy, that's your job to help someone who's crazy. So
yeah, but even though, you know, the ones because when they come in and see me, and they always go, oh, you know, if I'm crazy, please tell me. I said, well, the fact that you're saying that, you know, if you're crazy, I said, the people that are really crazy, they're walking around out there like they're normal.
Right.
So I said, number one, you're not crazy, you know. And but I've had so many people, unfortunately, talk to therapists, traditional therapists, that, you know, they'll finally try to open up about their abduction experiences. And this is after working with this therapist for a while with other issues, other life's issues. And, you know, they can tell that the therapist is not open to this. And, you know, actually some even said, you know, a couple even said, of course, it's that same, well, let's talk about, you know, possible sexual abuse.
Oh, geez.
You know, it's just really sad. So, and this just can't happen, can continue happening because, I mean, this, you know, I mean, millions of people. I just came back from Brazil, Alejandro, and when I was lecturing there, you know, people were coming up to me. You know, of course, they had interpreters because they all speak Portuguese, but they resonated with my slides and what I was saying, and when they were talking to me about their experiences, it was all the same thing, and they're in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
So this is worldwide.
Yeah, shocking. So it's good that you're there, and you're out there letting people know, and that's why I get to very fortunately see you quite often, because you're at a lot of all of these events. So we practically spent the summer together. We were at Roswell
and you and Karen there. Yeah, there were so many people at Contact.
Yeah. Oh, and Contact in the desert, right?
It was Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, you know, half of my lecture that night was without power.
Yeah, well, that's what was funny, and I even took a picture and I tweeted it and I Facebook it of you there. Of course, all you could see it was your silhouette, because I was getting worried. It was getting darker and darker, and we were about to be there in pitch dark, you know, not able to see you, just listening to your voice.
Well, at least, you know, we had the battery-operated laptop, because I have so many visuals that I wanted to show. And I figured, okay, I'm going to see if, you know, and I was going to leave it up to the audience. Do you guys want to continue?
Yeah.
You know, because we're in the dark.
But luckily the power came on just at the right moment where we were almost in the complete dark. That's so funny.
I mean, I've never in my 23 years ever experienced that.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's always an adventure. It's kind of fun, you know. Rich Dolan luckily was earlier in the day in that same room you were in. And luckily, it was the first time I've been able to see him do a talk without a PowerPoint. And he did a great job. You know, he rolled with it and just said, hey, I'm just going to talk. And
that's what you have to do, you know. But people I know love visuals. They love to see what you're talking about. So I was debating, do I want to stand there and just talk, especially that Coronado was a new talk.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was very fortunate, though, because we could use the computer and all that. But it was an experience. Like you say, you roll with the punches.
Yeah.
And the audience is great because they're always trying to help, you know.
Yeah.
Because they want to see it. They want to hear you. And so it was... It was an experience. It was fun, though.
Yeah, it was fun. So, and luckily the power came on before we were all in pitch dark, because I don't know how we
yes.
would have stumbled out of that room. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I was a little nervous about everybody, you know, how's everybody going to see, including myself. And I was walking out to my car later. It was so dark out there.
Yeah.
I couldn't see anything.
Yep. But your talk was, like you said, the Coronado incident. So we'll try to kind of, in the time we have left, talk about that and this really interesting case that you have this wonderful brand new book about. And so it is an event that took place in the late 90s, right?
It was, March of 1994.
Oh, early.
And during that time, I don't know if you remember, Alejandro, but I just drew a blank on the organization, Triad organization, which was funded by, at the time, Bob Bigelow. And the organization put together conferences all over the country. And I was one of the regular speakers, so I had a wonderful opportunity to travel and lecture with Dr. John Mack and Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs and John Carpenter. And then there were other speakers that were added in, you know, when we would go to different parts of the country. This time, because it was in San Diego, they had asked me to be the MC since it was, you know, in my backyard, and I was happy to do that. So I had the opportunity to be there. Of course, nobody knew that there was going to be, you know, abduction during this conference. So I was there as the MC. So I had a very huge job, just like you do with the Congress. And you have to be out there. You've got to keep everybody on time. And so when Friday night came, and it was the next morning, we came in on Friday night, some of my CIRO members, and Saturday morning we started, I opened up the conference, and, you know, slowly, one by one, my CIRO members were coming up to me saying things like, you know, I'm not feeling well today, I don't know if I'm going to stay, you know, for the day today, may go back to the hotel. I mean, just one by one, and I was, of course, not putting it together at the time because I was so busy, but it wasn't till after, it was like over the weekend of the conference, the Friday night, Saturday night, and we all left Sunday, and it was about a week later, a couple weeks later, I was getting phone calls, and I mean, there were two obvious things that happened. The chapter, Mike Evans' chapter, he woke up with blood spots on his pillow, and he kept thinking he hit his chin on the bathroom sink. But when you look at those sinks, it was a very old hotel called the Village Inn. It was another one that's it was considered a landmark there in Coronado, and it was in walking distance of the Hotel Del Coronado where we're having the conference. So six Sierra members stayed at the Village Inn. Well, he woke up with blood spots on his pillow and feeling a little, you know, they call it, when you have an experience, flu-like symptoms. You feel very achy and very tired, and that's such a typical reaction and symptom when the morning after. And then Alice, who stayed right next door to him in that hotel, she came away with a scoop mark on her shin, on her left shin, and it wasn't until later, probably, I believe Dr. Roger Lear took x-rays of it, I think it was in 96, when he found something underneath there. And then she decided to have it removed, and then we did the analysis, and also it's all, you know, in detail in her chapter. So that was physical evidence that we had, you know, from that weekend. And then there were the other people. It was about a dozen altogether. But I have a feeling that as the book is out there, more and more people are reading it, I'm going to be hearing from other people who were there. When I just did Coast to Coast in July, right before I left for Roswell, right after I did the show, it was a 3-hour show, I received a couple of emails from people who were there on the island during that time. So we'll see. It may be more people coming forward.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be very interesting.
These people who contacted you recently said they felt they had experiences at the same time as well?
Well, they weren't sure, but they said, you know, I was definitely on the island, and so what I'm going to do is sit with them, you know, and they're going to come in, and we're going to talk. And, and I told them to write everything down if they didn't already or didn't do it back then, to write everything down that they do remember from that weekend. So we'll see what happens. I mean, it could be much bigger, you know.
Right. So, and at the same time, President Clinton was at the same hotel? Or was he at the one across the street? I forget right now.
Well, he actually, I found out, I really didn't find out until we got there, that President Clinton was on the island, but he was staying at then his good friend Lawrence's house there, right there on Coronado, not far from, you know, not far from the Hotel Del Coronado. But he had just appointed him in 94, in fact, March of 94, that same month, ambassador to Switzerland. So he was staying with Lawrence. But we were told that he was going to do a talk at the Hotel Del Coronado on Sunday, on that Sunday. And it was as if he wasn't on the island yet, but he really was, because when we arrived and I was getting feedback from other people, there were Secret Service everywhere. I mean, they were parked along the street, the side street where the Hotel Del is. They were outside of the Lawrence house. You could see them. I mean, they stuck out like a sore thumb. They all had black suits on, and they had earpieces in and sunglasses. You know, it's not like they blended in,
right,
you know, with the tourists. So that was another added feature that, you know, I didn't know about until I arrived. But then, of course, I didn't pay attention really at that time, because I was so busy trying to keep on schedule, and I had to read all the bios and to introduce people. But I recall being in the lobby. I don't know if you've been to the Del Coronado. It's absolutely, I mean, it's majestic.
I've really heard a lot about it, because I know they have the famous They have a ghost stories there, but a lot of presidents over the years have stayed there.
Have stayed there. I mean, it's very historic. And
beautiful.
So I remember walking through the lobby and seeing the Secret Service walking in twos. And, you know, here I have this huge badge on me, you know, Triad, UFO Conference, you know. And it's really funny because they were looking at my badge. But you know that the way they check out areas before the president even arrives, months in advance, they knew we were going to be there.
Yeah.
You know, because we had already been scheduled. So it just happened to be a very strange turn of events with that weekend. So this is why it's taking me this long to put everything together and finally get the book out. Because people go, you know, there was a contact in the district. Oh, I kind of heard about this case, but it hasn't been publicized. I said, no. I said, because I'm just getting it out now.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll see. I think it's going to be, I think I may have a follow-up to this, depending on how many people contact me and if I do sessions with them to see what, you know, what happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know you've touched on this case, you know, over the years here and there during on your talks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty fascinating. Now, Clinton was doing a talk at the hotel on Sunday.
On Sunday. He was supposed to be there on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we didn't see him. We were over at the conference center, the Grand Hall, which is you have to walk outside of the Hotel Del to get down to the conference center.
Mm-hmm.
So that may have been why we didn't cross paths with him. I don't know where he was going to be lecturing, but we were packing up on Sunday, you know, and getting ready to caravan up to Carlsbad. At that time, there was a restaurant there Fridays, and we all had dinner. It was probably about at least 10 of us. And, of course, during dinner, people were discussing, gosh, you know, I wasn't feeling well. And I mean, I had one member, and I have it in his chapter, Jack. He lives way up there in Ventura County. And he had bought his tickets for himself and his wife months in advance so that he wanted to make sure he had his reservation. He made his hotel reservation. He paid all this money. He and his wife drove down. And Friday night, when the six of them all had an experience at the Village Inn, that Saturday morning, he announced to Alice, who his sister, and he was staying down the hall, they all stayed on the third floor, he was not going to go to the conference at all. And she said, what are you talking about? You paid this money? You were so excited? He goes, I'm going to go shopping with my wife. And when she told me, I said, what? You know, but as I said, things didn't really connect until much later. And then I realized, oh, no, this is not normal behavior for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did, you know, we did several sessions, and he just didn't want to have anything to do with being at the conference.
Wow.
Yeah.
So do you think that did the events, you know, people being having their experiences, did it all happen on one night?
It was as I found out, I wasn't sure, you know, because I had to interview each person. And even during the writing of Coronado, I made a trip up north to do some more hypnosis with two of the people. So as I was writing the book, I was still doing hypnosis because there's so much detail that you don't get in just one or two sessions. So I realized in putting all this together that it was a matter of over that time period of the conference. It was a Friday night with six people, and then Saturday night with, let me see, one, two, three, about four other people. But what the interesting part of it was is that they saw each other on the craft. And it wasn't until, of course, I was doing the hypnosis on each one, you know, they would mention, was so-and-so there that weekend? Mm-hmm. Because I think I see him on the other table. And then I confirmed, yes, you know, they were there. And so that was rather interesting when I was doing the hypnosis. So it was, at my talk at Contact in the Desert, I didn't know that Melinda was going to be there. And she did some nice drawings. And she, at the time, was not even a regular member of CIRO. But she's thinking later, gee, you know, was I meant to be in CIRO later? But she certainly had experiences because she stayed at the Hotel Del Coronado. She knew some people, but not really well as she knows now. But that's why I brought her up to speak to the audience, because I know the audience always likes to hear from the experiencers themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, I wanted to show her drawings. And really, and what I had shown at Contact, I'm adding much more. I'm adding audio. I just didn't have time to do it before, but I'm going to be adding more visuals on there because, it's so... it's so involved. It's just so hard to just talk about it and try to make sense from it because there's so many people involved and then of course their experience on the craft, is in detail but I'm relieved finally, Alejandro, that the book is out.
Yeah, I'm sure. That's a lot of work.
It took so long. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So, and what's interesting, of course, with this case is the physical evidence. And so did everybody have marks in their body?
It was, I know it was
I know
Alice,
a lot of them did, right?
And... Yeah, it was Mike he actually went to the doctor and there was a puncture mark in his ear where the blood had come from. Gary had a mark on his, the triangle on his penis. I think Sam and Gary roomed together and Sam, I believe he didn't come up with marks then, but it was after. Mike Evans, the one with the ear, the bleeding the ear, he and his wife, after Coronado, began having numerous experiences, both coming up with the same marks, burn marks, and I have some of them in the book. So it was almost like they were tagged, and they were continuing to have he and his wife experiences together. Hmm. So there's so many different aspects to this. Let me see. I don't think Melinda came up with marks, but she remembers she had the needle in the back of her head, and she saw other people having the same procedure. And of course, that is a very common procedure in abductions.
Hmm. The needle in the back of the head.
A needle, well, in different parts of the head area.
Uh-huh.
And here, Mike had it in his ear. So. Yeah, so she witnessed other people, and she was hearing them cry or scream, and
the people who reported seeing one another, had they known each other prior to the conference?
Yes, because like as I mentioned before, Melinda knew people, but she wasn't a regular part of CIRO yet. But I had known Melinda, in the field because I met her and seen her and spoken for her Learning Light down in Orange County. Oh, I'm sorry. She put on different talks, so I was one of the speakers. But they, they knew each other because they were all part of the support group.
Mm-hmm.
They would mention that with Sam and Gary, who roomed together in the hotel, they were in the same examination room, and Sam was describing what was happening to Gary, and then the next morning, and Gary, if you know Gary, he's big guy. He looks like he's in the Marines, and he was trying to fight them. And other people mentioned that, too. It was Melinda and somebody else said, oh, it looks like he's ready to punch somebody out. And that's exactly his personality, He does not like to not be in control.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was interesting when that came out in hypnosis. But that's when the next morning Gary went to the bathroom. He vaguely consciously remembered something happening in the hotel room. And he went to the bathroom and he screamed. And he said, "Oh my God," because that's when he saw the triangle. And then he goes, "You've got to come see this." Of course, Sam said, "I'm not going to go in there and see that." You know, it's just kind of humorous in a way, too. But when I hypnotized Gary, he was very blocked about that weekend. I did get some information out, but you can imagine, you know, waking up with something like that on your private mm-hmm. part. And then what's another interesting aspect is that Gary, and they you know, everybody would attend the support group meetings every month. That was in the early years when I was having those meetings in my home. Gary, after that, and this is what Sam told me, that Gary did not want to speak to Sam anymore. He's like,
wow.
he avoided him. He didn't, you know, and I think it was too much of a reminder of what happened because, you know, Sam goes, yeah, he doesn't want to associate with me. And I noticed at the meeting, you know, he would sit on the other side of the room. So just behavior like that as well, just like Jack not wanting to be present at the conference, you know, just psychological things like that were interesting when they came up.
Mm-hmm. Have you shared this or directly or indirectly and gotten any response from Bob Bigelow?
I have not yet. Mm-hmm. He called me months ago, and we just kept missing each other. So I may get his address, direct address, and just send him a copy
mm-hmm.
and see what happens.
Yeah, great. That would be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just thinking about that.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting to see what he thinks. And do you feel that the Secret Service knew anything about what might have been going on?
Well, that's the whole, you know, that's another mystery with this case is that, you know, was President Clinton and his entourage there because they were briefed? Or, which I think more on this level that, the aliens knew that we were going to be there and the president and his Secret Service were going to be there and they were going to perform this huge operation because people, the abductees mentioned how large the ship was. I mean, I remember one saying, I've never been in a ship this large. And after at the debriefing with him, I said, you know, I said, it makes me feel that they were totally prepared. They brought a larger ship for different procedures and operations, and that they were going to bring the president on board, you know, I mean, it had to be a large enough ship for all those people, because all at the same time, they were all taken all in one room. But interesting, nobody mentioned that they saw the president or a Secret Service on there. So it could have been that if he was taken up, he was taken up to a different part of the ship. So that remains to be seen. I'm waiting to hear what happens. I lectured with Ben Hansen in Roswell, and he had mentioned to me, he goes, I may have a connection to get your book to Clinton.
Hmm.
So I said, well, let me know.
Yeah.
So it's... Yeah, I will update this, you know, as I hopefully get more information.
Yeah, well, given his take, he's certainly into UFOs, so mm-hmm. and the idea of possible visitation. So at the very least, even if he's skeptical about abductions, I guess nobody knows for sure what he thinks about that.
Right.
He would, I'm sure, be interested in reading about it and knowing about what was going on or what people were reporting when he was there, you know, on the same weekend.
Exactly. So I'm going to follow up with Ben and see, you know, who I should send it to or send it to him, and then he could send it off. But that will be, you know, very interesting. I'll keep you posted.
Yeah. Well, and what I think I find really interesting, and I think he and many others should, is that, you know, seeing your talk and all of these things that went on, I mean, to believe, you would have to, if you don't believe something mysterious happened, that would mean that these people, you know, did these things to themselves, made these marks on their own bodies all separately. And of course, you know, if you're an outsider, you would say, well, that's completely possible. These guys are going to a UFO conference. But, you know, knowing you and trusting you and knowing you and hearing your description of some of these people, I mean, given, you know, your opinion, it seems pretty far-fetched that these people would do something like that.
Oh, and especially, and I'll address this to the men in the audience. Would anybody out there carve a triangle on your penis?
Yeah.
Just so you could say, oh, I've been abducted. I don't think anybody in their right mind would do that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. If somebody did that on purpose, I'd send them to a psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm. So when you say that, when you said it in Contact in the Desert, and when you said it just now, it makes me cringe.
Okay.
Just the
well,
idea.
That's what I say. The men will start crossing their legs.
Right.
That
just what I just did.
I know, because isn't it crazy? I mean, if somebody approached this and said, oh, they did all these marks themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was a man that said it to me and say, okay, picture you taking a knife and carving this on the top of your penis. I mean, I would be that direct with the debunker, whoever, you know, would say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's why, one of the things out of many things that makes this so interesting. And certainly if something mysterious did happen, of course, it's even more mysterious or more noteworthy that it happens right under the nose of the Secret Service, because they were there in force that weekend.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. It's almost like, you know, the aliens were like thumbing their nose at them, saying, look at what we could do. You know, your security force can't stop us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very true. I mean, they, you know, they can accomplish what they need to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's one of those. It's going to be an ongoing case, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I explain to people. I think so many people are shocked to think, oh, this happens to more than one person at a time. You know, I questioned a couple times during the week when I was at the Congress, when I was hosting the experiencer sessions. How many here feel that they have experience while they've been at this conference? You know, and it's like maybe less than half of the people,
mm-hmm.
but still hands went up.
Yeah.
And I said, don't be surprised. I said, there's a lot of energy under this roof right now, you know, so it happens all the time.
Yeah. Well, and what I think is really interesting, too, given, you know, the Bigelow connection, is that the M.O., of the mystery in this case is very similar to that of which is what happened or what they were dealing with at their ranch in Utah. I mean, that this it would do things right where, you know, behind their backs. And it was almost like this intelligence was thumbing its nose at the researchers, saying, you know, we're just way far, three steps ahead of you, which is what the researchers say. Is it, you know, even we have Colonel Alexander talking about that, a video on our YouTube. I've talked to Cole McClellan, the scientist in charge, and that's what they all say. Whatever this was way ahead of us. It was so enigmatic. And it wouldn't let us. It was in control the whole time.
That's the thing. Exactly. That's a really good comparison, good point, because they, you know, here, they had there at the ranch, all the scientists and had their equipment, and, you know, they figure they're going to catch something. And the same thing on the Coronado. I mean, it was swarming with Secret Service. You know how they are. They're everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you know, all this happened.
Yeah. So strange. Well, great. So we're pretty much out of time. So people have to check out this fascinating book, Coronado. They can get it at CiroInternational.com, or you also have it up on Amazon. But
right, they can go directly to Amazon if they wish, and it's also on Kindle.
Okay, great.
So I just got it up on Kindle. But thank you again, Alejandro, for having me on the show, and again, thank you for your support of my work and writing such a wonderful endorsement.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. So it's great to have you on. It's always wonderful to see you when we do at the event. And we'll keep in touch as usual so we can keep up to date on what's going on. And thank you so much for being on the show again. It's been way too long since I've had you on, and I'll have to not wait so long to have you on again next time.
Okay, Alejandro, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much to Yvonne for joining us today on Open Minds UFO Radio. Isn't she wonderful? Remember, go to her site, CiroInternational.com, to read more about her and to get her book. She is great. You know who else is great? Is you, the listener. Again, I want to thank you guys. It is so fun to go to these conferences and stuff and to meet some of you all. It's wonderful to say hi, and thank you all so much for your kind words and for listening. I mean, it means a lot because, you know, we've been doing this for years. We love to share the information, and it's just, you know, important and wonderful to know that people are out there getting the information and enjoying what we do. So I want to thank you all again. Remember, you can read all of those stories that we talked about at the beginning of the show at openminds.tv. I also want to remind you of spacing out. And actually, you'll notice I'm on spacing out more lately because Jason, as he said, is in Boise. So he's going to be doing special reports, and then I'm hosting it with Maureen. So we have a new spacing out that came out this past Friday. And of course, we'll have a new one this Friday. So that's on our YouTube channel. You can see it at openminds.tv or the Open Minds TV YouTube channel. Also, the UFO Congress. So you've got to register really quick here to get the $199 special. That's $50 off. So it's a lot less. We have posted about a dozen of our speakers. So that's about half of the speakers we have completely confirmed. We do have requests out to others, and we pretty much know who the others are. However, we're waiting to get paperwork and to get everything, you know, completely confirmed before we list it. We have a lot of exciting speakers, you know, people that you've probably heard because I think they've mostly been on the show. But as you know, with the UFO Congress, we don't like to always do the same old, same old. We don't like to have the same speaker every year. The only speaker we have every year is Jaime because he's kind of an institution. He's grandfathered into the International UFO Congress, but he's wonderful. People love to see his talk, but we have some wonderful people you probably haven't seen talk before, but have fascinating topics that you're going to love. So it's very exciting. One of the people we just confirmed is Mike Pilkington, Mark Pilkington, who of course did the Mirage Men documentary and book. We've had him on the show. People love his stuff. He's in the news all the time lately as well. But we're also going to have Joshua Warren. He's going to be talking about the research behind the alien abduction movie, which of course we spoke with the director and producer of that movie on the show. Hopefully he should be making it, but we will be doing a special viewing of that movie. We will be also showing Mark Pilkington's documentary, which people will really love. We've got a lot of really exciting things going on with films this year, actually. So we're going to be showing a lot of documentaries. We have this guy, Jeremy Corbell, coming to the conference, and he is going to be the next big deal in ufology. Trust me. After our conference, you will hear about Jeremy. You will know Jeremy, and he will be the guy everybody's talking about this time next year. He is really the next big deal in UFOs because he has done some amazing videos. He's releasing some amazing documentaries, some really groundbreaking stuff. He's going to be releasing one soon. We'll be showing it at the conference, and he will be at the conference speaking about some of his other interviews, but he's really done some amazing stuff. I know some of you are think, well, why don't people do this, or why don't people do that? And a lot of the things that you wish people would have investigated or kind of dug into deeper, he has done that digging, and he has found some fascinating stuff. I always love when I'm skeptical about something and someone proves me wrong, and he has proven that. Some of the things I'm skeptical about are much more mysterious than I thought. So he's someone you're definitely going to want to see. I think when it comes to UFO research, you know, this is going to be a little bit historical, his talk at the conference. We also have other historical, incredible things that will be coming up that we haven't announced yet. So if you want to get the discount, you got to do that by September 5th. Go register at ufocongress.com. So you got to come to the conference. You are not going to regret it. You are going to love it. And it's great to see you all. And it's great to see these researchers. Yvonne's always there, and a lot of these others. So, and you get to have some intimate time, you know, some time to sit down with these people. It's 5 days, so you have plenty of time to meet them for lunch or dinner or just to sit outside. The weather is always wonderful, by a fire or under the stars, and to talk about our fascinating subject. And it's a lot of fun. So check out UFO Congress. Make sure you're there. What did I say? I already talked about YouTube. I talked about this. I talked about that. So check it all out because it's worth it. It's a lot of fun. And thank you all again for joining us. And of course, as usual, I want to thank Caleb Hanks, who does the wonderful open and close music. You can go to Clerk Chronicles to get his music. Just Google like Hanks, Caleb Hanks, Clerk Chronicles. That's usually the best. It's like theclerkchronicles.com. But he's got all of his music up there for free, and I love his music. In fact, let's listen to it now as we close out the show. We will talk to you next week. Adios, muchachos.